This week we received probably the prime compliment of all. A lady in great seriousness told me that her dog always refused to leave the room while I was on television. My program is probably the only one on television that has gone to the dogs. I understand that the dog was a St. Bernard. He's giving up his liquor license for Lent. Perhaps we can introduce this subject by telling you the story of someone in the South who was arraigned before the judge, and the judge said to him, "Sam, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" And he says, "Judge, if you're going to put me under those limitations, I haven't a word to say." And so there are people who believe there are no limitations, that the philosophy of self-expression is always right, and that repression of any kind, and asceticism, self-denial, mortification, all of these things end in a frustration of personality. Now, because the philosophy of self-expression is so very general in our land, may we analyze it and ask, is self-expression always right? In order to answer the question, one must begin by making a distinction. Now, self-expression can refer to one of two things. It can refer to something, for example, that is simple, or it can refer to something that is complex. A thing is simple, for example, when it produces only one effect. It is complex when it produces many effects. Now, self-expression is always right when it refers to something simple. For example, a bedbug has a perfect right to self-expression. So has a flea. So has fire. So has water. So has ice. When you get into something that is complex, and therefore capable of producing several effects, well, self-expression may not always be right. It may sometimes be wrong. Now, let us take some examples of complex thing. For example, is a locomotive more self-expressive when it is on the track or when it is off the track? Is a razor more self-expressive when it shaves the beard or when it cuts the face? Or take a cold, a common cold. Now, many people have colds, and you are asked, "How is your cold?" You say, "Oh, my cold is terrible." No, the cold is a cold may not be terrible. The cold is a cold may be very good. You may be terrible as a result of the cold. Because inasmuch as you have the cold now, we're dealing with a certain amount of complexity. And I can imagine very well a doctor being called in, and you say, "Doctor, will you please care for me?" And the doctor says, "You know, as I examine your flu germs, I want to tell you that you have a particularly fine culture of germs. I do not believe that in my life I have ever seen germs in better and more complete development than they are in you. And being a scientist, I am in favor of self-expression. I therefore am going to develop this flu within you in order to study all of the effects. Oh, I know that you want me to cure you. You say that your health is more important. Now, that means I have to repress these germs. Do you realize that? Does it regard your health being more important?" Well, Einstein says everything is relative. It's purely a question of relativity. For my part, I'm going to express my love of germs. Is it really that simple? Was the doctor right in being that self-expressive? Or were you right in insisting on your health? Now, inasmuch as we are dealing, therefore, with something complex, because we are dealing with man's complexity derives from the fact that he's composed of a body and a soul. Matter and spirit. And the two do not always get along together. They may sometimes get along together like many a husband and a wife in a home. Not so well. And if you concentrate all the time on the body, well, the soul may suffer. If you concentrate all the time on the soul, the body itself may suffer. For example, have you ever in your life known an athlete, a great athlete, who was also a specialist in mathematical calculus? Have you ever known, for example, a man who became an expert in Hittite civilization, whoever won the American Open Golf Championship? I heard of a college, incidentally, that next year was going to have three football teams, one for offense, the other for defense, and the third to attend classes. Did you ever know a very athletic girl who was strong enough to do indoor housework? Benjamin Franklin said he knew a man who developed his mind so very much that he knew the name of a horse in nine languages, but he bought a cow to ride. It's impossible for us to concentrate on one without the other suffering to some extent. It has been said, you know, that if a priest plays golf under 80, score of 80, there's something wrong with his priesthood. If he plays above 80, there's something wrong with his golf. Now, inasmuch as we are very complex, we are to some extent like a man on a teeter-totter. Long time since I've drawn a man for you, and I've not improved one bit in 4 years. Not a particle. Now, it happens that when, for example, a man represses his love of self, that his sense of solidarity and community goes up. Many a wife has said, for example, of a drinking husband, he's so wonderful when he doesn't drink. So if he represses drink, there's an elevation of his home life. Take, for example, going to a picnic. You repress the ants, you've got a good picnic. Who was it that said, denied that ants were the busiest creatures in the world and the hardest workers? He said they weren't hard workers at all because he always saw them at picnics. If we repress, therefore, the flesh, it follows that the spirit is going to be elevated. I believe, for example, that every single person in the world has actually got just so much energy. Now, not everybody has the same amount of energy. Some have tremendous powers. And if these powers go in the direction of evil, they're going to do a great deal of harm in the world. If they go in the direction of good, they will be benefactions to humanity. Now, let us take, for example, a person who has, say, not very much energy. Say, 10 ergs of energy. There's 10 ergs of energy. And he goes in the direction of virtue. Well, suppose he turned around and went in the direction of vice. How vicious would he be? The chances are he'd be just about that vicious. Now, take a person who has much more energy. That particular person goes in the direction of virtue, produces a great quantity of it. That person went in the direction of vice, he would indeed be very vicious. There, I believe, is the great difference between Lenin and St. Francis. I mean Lenin, who introduced communism into Russia. If Lenin had gone in the direction of virtue instead of hate, violence, and revolution, he would have been a St. Francis of Assisi. And if a St. Francis of Assisi had gone the same direction of Lenin, he would have been a Lenin. Almighty God can deal with people who have a great deal of force and passion. That was one of the reasons, I think, why he loved Paul. Paul could hate. Not simply because Paul could hate, he had a tremendous capacity for love. The Passion of Mary Magdalene was never killed. The Passion of Mary Magdalene was just simply turned into another direction. And very fittingly, therefore, she's been called the 13th Apostle. The 13th Apostle simply because she has done so very much good by turning all of this energy around. The little flower, now the little flower is not LaGuardia. The little flower was the saint, Saint Teresa. Saint Teresa said that if she had followed her passions and had not in some way repressed that which was evil within her and had not responded to God's grace, she probably would have been one of the most evil women who ever lived. That's easy enough to understand. In other words, you never have a self-expression of something without a repression of something else. You never have a repression without a self-expression. That's why it's ridiculous to say of complex beings that self-expression is always right. You put heat into a room, you repress the cold. Elevate yourself in the direction of goodness, you must repress vice. There must be some kind of asceticism and mortification and self-discipline. When then is self-expression right? Well, self-expression is right when it is directed to that which is the highest in our being. For example, when the mind is directed to truth, when the will is directed to goodness, when the body is more important than the raiment, and the whole being is directed to God, where the personality is also directed to its duty, and self-expression is always to be praised. And then it aids in what is called self-possession. Otherwise, we are possessed by something that is outside of us. That is why, incidentally, our blessed Lord said, if your eye scandalizes you, pluck it out and cast it away. If your hand scandalizes you, cut it off and cast it away. It was not that our blessed Lord recommended an incomplete body, but rather he said sometimes that which is lower and base will stand in the way of that which is higher. And just as a ship in a storm at sea must be prepared to sacrifice its cargo, so too we must be prepared to sacrifice the lower things in order to possess the higher. That is why all of our games are made of obstacles. Do you not think it would be far much easier, for example, for a pole vaulter to run under the pole instead of going over it on a pole? Wouldn't it be much easier for basketball players if the baskets were down about 6 feet? Take, for example, golf. There's rough, and then the sand traps. The sand traps. I remember some years ago, I was in the Sahara Desert, great expanse of sand, and the guide said to me, he said, do you know what that is? I said, sure, I know what it is. But where's the green? So that was the only part of the golf course I knew. All right, now we've been saying that in order to express the best of our personality, we must in some way mortify that which is lower. Maybe objective. Then you're opposed to pleasure. Then we are not to have a good time. Then the long face is recommended. Then you pervert life. It may be objected. And you begin to take a pleasure. Really a pleasure in giving yourself pain. Is that true? No, those who make that statement, first of all, they do not understand what real asceticism, mortification, and self-discipline are. Remember that our blessed Lord said, when you fast, wear not a long face. Anoint your head. Wash your face. Appear to men not to fast. It is also worth observing, and this is interesting. Suppose I just ask you the question. Can you ever recall in the gospel where our blessed Lord ever sang? Now he came on earth primarily to die, to offer himself for the sins of the world. When did he sing? The night that he went out to his death. It was the only time he ever sang a song. Was that denying pleasure? Christian asceticism is not the same as the Oriental asceticism that sits on spikes and walks on fire. Why? Because that type of asceticism considers mortification and pain as an end in itself. It is not an end in itself. And if you make it an end in itself, you are perverting it. God takes no glory in pain as pain. In mortification as mortification. What is the inspiration of it then, if it is not just the seeking of self-restraint for the purposes of self-restraint? Well, the reason for all asceticism and mortification is love. Love. What a man loves is always the measure of his happiness. No man ever made an affirmation of love without at the same time making a negation of something else. When we love something, we are willing to dispense with all that stands in the way of that which we love. That is why, for example, a man who loves vice cannot bear the talk of religion. His love is elsewhere. Man who loves virtue, repelled by vice. See how many lives are changed when a new love comes into them. For example, a baby in a home. Look at all the sacrifice a baby inspires. Mother and father, a husband and wife, would certainly never get up at 3 o'clock in the morning just for the fun of it. Maybe it was the first time that maybe the husband ever got up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the sake of a bottle, but he gets up. Then they stay at home at night. They deny themselves certain clothes and even food in order that this new life of theirs may prosper. It was love that inspired the sacrifice. When a man loves a woman, he gives her a ring of gold. Why? It represents a sacrifice. The day that men forget that love is not synonymous with sacrifice, they will ask, what kind of a cruel and ruthless creature was that woman to have asked for a ring of gold instead of tin? It's the day that men forget that love is synonymous with sacrifice, they will ask, what kind of a God is it that asks for mortification and self-denial? When young people are in love, one will ask the other, do you like me in red? Maybe the girl will say to the boy will say to the girl, How do you like my hair? Do you like it when I have my hair standing on end like frills upon the fretful porcupine? Would you rather have my hair brushed back? Why? Simply because one wishes to satisfy love. Now take, for example, dieting and fasting. What's the difference between dieting and fasting? You lose 20 pounds either way. Materially, there's no difference. You diet simply because you love your body. You fast because you love your soul. That's the only difference. The only way, therefore, we can show love of God is simply by getting rid of those things that weigh us down and prevent the flight to God. Why not, therefore, for example, in the season of Lent rolls around, we'll give up the cocktail. Send me the 50 cents and I'll send it to the poor of India. That's a good idea. Give up one package of cigarettes. Give up one package of cigarettes a week. Send me the 25 cents and I'll send it to 80,000 of our lepers that we're caring for. Just give up one movie a week. And I'll send it to some of the refugees in Vietnam. And then you'll show a certain amount of love. This is the world problem, actually. I'm making it very simple. But the difference between the civilization of the West and the civilization of the East is this. This is our Western civilization. We have a love without sacrifice, without self-restraint, without any mortification. Communism, on the contrary, is a sacrifice without love. A love without sacrifice is what? A love without sacrifice is sentimentalism, romanticism. It is softness. It is the rottening of our nation. What is a sacrifice without love? It is violence. It is tyranny. It is hate. It is the totalitarian state. We have to beware of this. Reminding ourselves of what Toynbee said, that of 19 civilizations that have perished from the beginning of the world until the present time, 16 have perished from within. They died of softness. It could very well be that in a struggle just on the natural order alone, that Russia might be stronger because it believes in discipline, believes in sacrifice, believes in a certain amount of negation, self-negation in order to attain its ends. But that must not be so, and that will not be so, provided we who know something about the cost in our civilization will introduce self-discipline, mortification, self-restraint in our home, in our nation, in our schools, that we may bring peace to a tortured world. Bye now, and God love you.